So every time you have to ask yourself, what am I doing now? How does that relate to this macro objectives that we share? So you have to ask yourself that question. You have to discuss with the colleagues, is this what we have in mind? Does this contribute to our objectives? And again, it doesn't mean that you're going to achieve those objectives, but it's at least that what we are doing focuses on achieving those objectives in small and small steps.
Hello and welcome to our program, 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn, where we talk to business people, journalists, ambassadors, and leaders and luminaries from all over the world. My name is Siebe van der Zee, and I'm your host. I'm originally from the Netherlands, happily residing in the Grand Canyon state of Arizona in the United States, also known as the Dutchman in the Desert. I hope you will enjoy this program. This podcast is sponsored by PDF, the Professional Development Forum. You can learn more about PDF at professionaldevelopmentforum.org. Our guest today is Ambassador André Haspels. Ambassador Haspels is the current ambassador of the Kingdom of the Netherlands to the United States of America, based in Washington, D.C. Early in life in the Netherlands, André learned about agriculture and international trade from his father, who was actively involved in trading flowers all over the world. Our audience may know that the Netherlands is one of the largest producers and exporters of flowers in the world. In the late 1980s, Mr. Haspels joined the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs, where he served in multiple capacities. He became head of the political department at the Netherlands Embassy in South Africa, where, among other activities, he was involved in the setup of the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Very important. Mr. Haspels then served as ambassador of the Netherlands to Vietnam and to South Africa, and as director general of political affairs with the Dutch government in the city of The Hague in the Netherlands. In 2019, he became ambassador of the Netherlands to the United States, and you can learn more about Ambassador André Haspels on our website, 10lessonslearned.com. Welcome, Mr. Ambassador. Thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be with you, Simon.
Of course, you and I have met before, both in Washington and recently in Arizona. It truly is a great honor to have you as a guest on our program, 10 Lessons Learned. In general, I'm curious, you know, you have had such a global experience, and of course, now you're serving as the Dutch ambassador in Washington, D.C. since 2019. Just in general, do you have any thoughts, observations from this more recent experience over the last 3 years?
Well, first of all, if I look back at my time in D.C. now, I should make a distinction between pre-COVID and during the COVID, during the pandemic. Because during the pandemic, theaters were closed, sports matches were not being played, there were no concerts. So life was very much different, and the things that you can enjoy in Washington than during normal times. So I'm very happy that we can gradually go back again to the museums, to events, to meet with people, obviously, again in Washington as well. I think Washington is a great city to live. It is green. I like to run and to bike, and the city is great for doing that. At the same time, I also realized that Washington is not the United States. So I always say to people, Washington is a great city, but if you want to get an impression of the United States, you should travel.
Absolutely. And of course, you are traveling quite a bit, again, recently in the Grand Canyon state, but I can relate to that. And I think that happens sometimes, especially a large country like the United States, that there are differences between regions and states in the United States, even though the country is united in that sense, but there are definitely differences. So if you think about your experience and your global experience, is there perhaps a lesson that you have learned and a lesson that you have learned in life, in your career, that perhaps you would like to teach yourself, assuming that you would be 30 years old today?
Yeah, well, I'm currently 60 years old. So that, and I hope to become at least 90. So that means that 2/3 of my life going back with 1/3. I'm interested in philosophy, and one of the groups, the philosophers that I follow belong to the group that are called the Stoics. And they have principles for life. And four of them, the most important one, are wisdom, justice, courage, and moderation. And those four, I think you'll get more and more when you get older. When you're 30, you might think that you have them all, but when you're 60, you realize that you have learned another 30 years and that you've become a bit wiser, maybe a better sense of justice, maybe a bit more courage, maybe also the importance of moderation. So if I was 30, I would have liked to have those four lessons from the Stoics a bit clearer in mind. But this is where it's all about, no? In life, you continue to learn, you feel inspired, and every time you take a little step, hopefully in the right direction. And I think, you know, you need these years, you need to get older to have to become better. It's like wine.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand. No, I'm kidding. Of course. Yeah, that makes sense. Courageous is one of them. And I think once you get older, sometimes perhaps you are no longer as actively involved and say, well, that'll happen. You know, I don't have to do anything. Is that, I don't see that with you. I'm not suggesting that, of course, but being courageous, do you think that that's going to increase over time?
Yes, I think that increases. And I don't think I have the tendency to say, well, you know, it's not my business anymore. I get older, let the others arrange it or solve it. I mean, for instance, as a youngster, you might be impressed by authority, by ministers or heads of state or big business leaders or you know, important people. But if you meet with them, you realize that they are normal people as well, that you have to engage with, that have their doubts, that have their weaknesses, that have their strong points. So I think you should develop the courage to not see them only as heroes or people that are high above your grade and that you should be afraid of. You should try to engage with them and try to learn from them. So have a courage also, if necessary, and I've done that in my career with ministers, to contradict them, to say, well, minister, I've heard you, but I think there is an alternative as well, and then explain it. So I think you need, as a youngster, to have that courage is maybe more difficult than if you grow older, you've more experience, and then maybe also they accept easier from you your points of view, your observations.
I think it's very interesting that you say that, and I completely agree. In a way, I would say we can talk about this the rest of our program, but we're gonna shift to the 10 lessons, because that is a very, very powerful point. And obviously there are some cross-cultural elements in that, right? As far as, does your culture allow you to be direct and speak up, etc.? But that's, again, that's a different topic and maybe for our next conversation. I appreciate that. Your lessons, of course, I have looked at, very interesting, and I'm very curious about the story behind the different lessons that you have. Lesson number one, set achievable goals. What are your thoughts on that one?
Well, I think as a youngster, at least speaking for myself, I had very strong idealistic objectives about changing the world and improving the world and, you know, stop suffering human mankind, make sure that everybody has enough food, that the climate would improve, etc., etc. These are great goals that we should continue to strive for, but which are very difficult to achieve.
Yes.
So I've learned not to forget about these big goals. On the contrary, they should be your guiding lines and, you know, the point on the horizon where you want to arrive. But at the same time, I'm not going to bring world peace. You know, when I come home from my work and my children were young, they asked, Daddy, did you save the world today? Or did you bring world peace today? Yeah. And I said, well, I've tried my best, but it's difficult. But this time, today, I spoke to an NGO who is trying to solve a conflict in Syria. And we support them. And they appreciate that we listen to them and that we talk to them. So that's a very small contribution. So it's better to set achievable goals. I can engage with people who are busy with conflict resolution and conflict solving and show their support, then I can create world peace. So this is an achievable goal. And I think also in terms of frustration, it will not be possible, I think, for one individual to bring world peace. There are exceptional individuals in life, and I've been posted in South Africa, and one of my heroes is Nelson Mandela. What he did when it comes to reconciliation and bringing a nation together is unique. So he set a goal that was almost impossible, and I think he paid a great contribution to this. But first of all, also for Mandela, it meant he had to set achievable goals. He couldn't do everything when he was in prison. He also couldn't do everything when he was elected as president. He had to look for compromises. He had to look for support. So even a great man like Mandela had to set achievable goals, and what he has achieved during his life is wonderful. So again, setting achievable goals also helps you not to become frustrated, but keep fun in life as well.
Yeah, the challenge perhaps is the definition of what is achievable, because there's a lot of hope and expectations and say, this is something we should do. It makes sense. And there are many topics currently going on. You can say, well, this should happen, but it doesn't always work. You gave some great examples, Mandela in prison, basically end of the line, what can you do? But I do believe that in life, you have to have those aspirations and you have to stick to those lessons learned from family, parents, experience. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Lesson number two, be modest. Now, again, I'm curious about your definition of modesty.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it says something about me being raised in a modest family. There is a Dutch saying that you should keep your head low because otherwise you catch too much wind, or high trees catch a lot of wind and then you become more vulnerable. But I also think there is no reason to feel yourself more superior compared to others. You're one of a team. You contribute to a team in whatever position you are. And especially when you grow in your career, like myself, I became from the youngest civil servant as a third secretary at an embassy to ambassador in a very important country for the Netherlands. The principle of being part of a team and to stay modest and to realize that your functioning very much depends on the contribution of others, how they prepare your meeting, your speech, how they prepare what you have to say, what you're going to do, how they position you is very much their responsibility. And so I depend a lot on the quality of my colleagues. So, and I should not, you know, when the ambassador comes in the room, most of the people look at him or her, they want to take a picture, all niceties about the ambassador, but it's teamwork. So I realize that, and I think it is important for everybody to remain modest, even if you have exceptional talents, you're always dependent on your group and the people who support you.
It is to your credit, the way you explain that. I'm also thinking how you, the way you represent the Netherlands, yes, you are a modest person. At the same time, we have, go back to the other lesson, achievable goals. We need to reach certain levels. And in some of it, when you talk about perhaps marketing, branding, modesty may not be the best way to achieve those goals. As a person, yes, that's who you are and that's what you believe in. But at the same time, sometimes you have to set goals that go beyond like, well, let's see if they like us. No, they better like us.
Yeah. No, that's true. And I think that being modest doesn't mean that you may not be proud of what you achieve. And I'm very proud of my country. And for instance, the fact that we are a relevant player in the field of trade and investment in the United States, or that we work a lot together in other areas, I'm very proud of that. But still, I think you should be modest in saying that you are indispensable for the United States, or that without the Netherlands, this could not be achieved. No, this is not the case.
Yeah, to your credit, again, I like it. Lesson number three, make others look good, make them shine.
Yeah, I think I said something about it in the previous question as well. I look at my work as teamwork. And again, the ambassador is often on the front row, on the picture, in the newspaper, but there is a group behind it. So always when we have had a successful event, we try to evaluate, we sit together, And we do that in an open and constructive way. And also if things have gone wrong, we discuss that. But in general, it is important to thank the people for their contribution and to make sure, and also thank them for that in public, for a bigger group. So to give you one example, at the opening of the renovation of the Netherlands Carillon in Arlington, and I should everybody recommend to go there, we did that on the 5th of May, I was as a token of appreciation by the National Park Service, our counterpart, I was awarded as Honorary Park Ranger. As Honorary Park Ranger, for which I'm very proud. Yeah. I have the title here, I have the plate, but it's of course not about me. So in my words of thanks, I said that I was very honored with the title, I will cherish it, but I only have this received this title because of the work that others have done. So I think, you know, so you mention it, there are other ways to celebrate if things go well. And I think that is very important to recognize the contributions of others. And again, to remain a bit modest about your own contribution.
Well said. When I think of what you just mentioned, as far as make other people shine, I know that's part of a Dutch expression, of course. Lesson number 4, give people trust and space. And I was thinking about that because how do you know if you can trust someone?
You don't know, Siebe. You don't know. But my general consideration is that people are okay. So that is my starting point. I'm not suspicious. And the general assumption is people are okay. They qualify to do their job and you can trust them. Sometimes that's not the case, obviously, but that's my starting point. So that means that you should rely on them, remain in contact with them. If they are responsible for a certain job, for instance, preparing an event, at the very beginning, sit together and say, this is what I more or less expect. What do you think? Can you do it? Are there any difficulties or challenges that we have to face? And if we agree more or less about the final product that has to be delivered, a successful event where we have enough guests and where we can make the Dutch position clear, then I'm not going to control every day if we are on the right track. We'll do it periodically, and I hope to create a kind of work atmosphere that if colleagues find that things are not going the right way or they need my help because they cannot get somebody on the invitee list, or we have, a financial problem that needs to be escalated to a higher level, then I hope that my colleagues feel free to contact me, to approach me and say, hey, listen, we discussed this, but this is where I'm running at now, and how can we solve it? So the basic principle is you give people space, you give them responsibility, you focus on the relation. And then in general, my experience, things go well. And my other observation is that even things do not go well, the crux of the matter is that you can learn again from things that do not go well. So something goes wrong. The first thing you do is damage control, make sure that it doesn't get bigger, you know. And once that is done, you sit, you evaluate, and you try to avoid it going wrong for the next time.
Are there, in your experience, any role models that you look at? You mentioned Nelson Mandela earlier, but are there individuals when you think of this topic as far as giving people trust and space that you say, this person I learned from, this is someone that does it. Where did you learn this from? Because obviously people don't just delegate. They want to have confidence that they're going to do a good job.
Yeah. Well, I think I learned it from previous colleagues that I worked with, from previous chefs or ambassadors. And it's not, you know, one person that stands out. If I have to mention one colleague, it's a former ambassador here in the United States as well. That's Renee Jones-Bos. She has become later in her career Secretary General and an ambassador in Moscow. She's a very well-respected diplomat and still very active. And I find her very inspirational for her way, her style of running an embassy or the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. But she was always approachable and she always gave you the feeling that she trusted you and that you were, you know, okay, that you had the freedom and the space to go ahead. But she also always, you know, gave the impression that if there is something, she was approachable.
Yeah, very impressive indeed. I agree with you there. Lesson number 5, it kind of fits in with what we're talking about. Be accountable to yourself and to others. And how can you, how do you build that up? Be accountable to yourself and to others. What is your thought about that?
Yeah, I think you have to explain what you are doing and why you are doing it. If you look at diplomacy and also foreign affairs, you know, it's a broad subject. We discussed earlier about the almost impossibility to achieve world peace, but still we try to work on world peace, on better economic relations. But this is a very broad, faraway goal. So every time you have to ask yourself, what am I doing now? How does that relate to this macro objectives that we share? So you have to ask yourself that question. You have to discuss with the colleagues, is this what we have in mind? Does this contribute to our objectives? And again, it doesn't mean that you're going to achieve those objectives, but it's at least that what we are doing focuses on achieving those objectives in small and small steps. And I think being accountable, you know, there's a tendency of leaders, and the higher you get in the organization, that you feel that you don't have to be accountable because, hey, you're the boss and you can decide. That's not how it works. I would say, on the contrary, the higher you come into the organization, the more important it is to be accountable, to explain what you are doing and why you are doing this. So accountability for me is a very important aspect of leadership.
I think that's so interesting because I look at that at a, let's say, cross-cultural level. It fits with our Dutch culture. You are the ambassador. There are obviously people in all levels working for you at the embassy. You are, can I say, the boss. But what I hear from you, and no surprise to me as a Dutchman, as a person, you don't see yourself as a better person than other people that work for you.
No. No, that's correct. And I also realize that it says something about the country where I come from, where we come from. And I also realize that it is different in other cultures where you have more traditional lines, maybe more authoritarian lines, more a difference between generations. And it's not necessarily wrong. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I remember, for instance, when I was ambassador to Vietnam, that we had Vietnamese ambassadors going to the Netherlands to study. And they were astonished when they learned during their first courses at the university, not only that students were asking their professors questions, but also that they sometimes even questioned the authority of the professor, and that they said, well, professor, I heard this, you said this, but personally, I think that blah, 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 blah. This is very much, again, also our culture, to speak out, to not to accept authority as it is, but question it. And then again, the authority has to be accountable. He has to explain why he makes this statement and how he sees that. And for Vietnamese people, this is a very different context. And we have to be aware of that.
It's so interesting, and it brings a smile to my face because it gets me in trouble. And I've been in the United States for a few decades, but sometimes I have to realize I can be, quote unquote, very Dutch. And, you know, that's not always appreciated. And I had to learn over time to be more careful, even though the instinct is to just say it the way you see it and be open about it. And the other person will say, well, I have a different opinion, but that's fine. Let's move on and let's have a nice glass of Heineken, for example. But interesting. And I want to mention, of course, to our audience that we are talking today with André Haspels, Ambassador of the Kingdom of the Netherlands to the United States in Washington, D.C., sharing his 10 lessons learned. And we're very happy to continue with our lessons. We're going to lesson number 6. The circle of close family is highly important. I have a lot of thoughts when I think of that, but please share with us your thoughts.
Yes, again, it comes back also to earlier lessons that we discussed, Siebe. It's easy to formulate high-profile objectives that you want to achieve, but I sometimes notice that people who want to change the world have problems in ensuring that their own family is running well and that their own family is happy. And personally, again, set achievable goals, one of our earlier lessons, means try to be happy with your family. And if you things that go wrong with your partner or your children, it is something that you should address. And then, you know, achieving world peace should be put aside, but you should focus on the question why your son is unhappy because you moved to a new country to be diplomat there and he has to go to a new school. Why is that? I mean, discuss that. Same for my daughters. I have two daughters, two sons, my wife. You know, they are also the core that when I come home from my work, that I find at home. And if they're not happy, I'm not happy. So it's, again, it's a team. And you can, let's say, achieve your objectives in the family if you discuss with them, if you focus on them, if you do not neglect them and assume that they are also busy. Because if I go to a country as a diplomat, I quickly can start working. But for my children and my wife, they also have to adapt to the new situation. Absolutely. I should realize that, and I should put time in, you know, making sure that the family feels at home as well.
There's so much to it. There's an element of trust and comfort that comes with family. And at the same time, we all know that not every family is that associated, but ideally that's what it is. And it should never be underestimated how relevant family is. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me just give one more example, Siba.
Sure.
Often younger diplomats want to discuss with me about the next step in their career. And then they always say, "Well, yeah, I would like to work at that country, or I would like to have that posting at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs." And that's it. But then I always say, listen, there's another aspect as well. It's not only about what you want to achieve as a next step. It's also, what is the position of your family? What does your partner want? Does he or she want to join you, even if it means that he or she has to stop her career or his career? What do your children actually want? Do they want to join you because you want to go to South Africa, or do they prefer to stay at home? And what do you do, you know, to explain why you would love the family to go for 4 years to the United States, to South Africa or the United States, and that you realize that for them it's also very difficult? So yeah. The point is here, do not only focus on your own career, but consider that every step that you make also has consequences for your family, for your partner, for your children. So that's why it's so important to invest in that.
A very good point. And especially when you talk about expat assignments, where you take the family to a different country. I remember on a consulting situation, we talked about that other than the employee, the family was the weakest link in the process, weakest in the sense, like you explained, can the spouse get a job in that country, just a work permit? The spouse will give up his or her career, perhaps, where they are now. Definitely, again, and that's part of the point, the family connections, children in school, and at what age, just take them out of school and take them to another country. That can be, again, a weak link in that whole process. So it's well set in a global situation where when people relocate, there are many family issues involved, and underestimating that, it can do a lot of damage, So
absolutely.
Important lesson. Lesson number 7, we're making progress here. Never stop learning. You're never too old to learn. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's actually what I'm saying. And it sounds maybe trivial or like an open door, but I think, again, there is a risk if you have done a job for a long time that you feel that you've seen everything, that you know everything, which is not true. And I often at my residence have dinners or receptions or lunches. And today, actually, a colleague asked, do you not get tired of these many events? Now they start again after the pandemic. I see in your agenda that almost every evening you have something. And then I told her, no, actually, I like it because every event is different. I always, if I have a dinner or a lunch, I write down the core issues that we discuss or statements that people make, observations that they make quickly. And then later on that day or later in the week, I write them down again in the booklet, because you can get inspiration from every meeting, from every discussion with people. And to be honest, and that's another nice thing about Washington, the question that you asked earlier. I mean, there is a large number of think tanks. There's highly qualified people to discuss any subject that you wish to discuss. So often the meetings that we have are meetings with very interesting people, and I can learn from that, not only on the content, but also on, and I must, you know, Americans are great at that, the way they present themselves, they present the substance, the issues where they are responsible for, they are very good in doing that. And that's for me, not only something to learn, but it's also an inspiration. And I think the challenge is, or not the challenge, the task is to continue learning lifelong.
I have to think of, his name is Jack Welch. He was a former management guru, General Electric, etc. And he talked about the four E's, but the two of the four E's had to do with energy. And the second E was to energize the people that work with you, for you. As you go through your career, to me, it's obvious when I listen to you and when I see you on the screen, you have a lot of energy. And it is not related to age. You will continue to have that energy. And that is something that is not only helpful to yourself, instead of saying, hey, you know, I want to take things easy, with all due respect, but you have that drive. And for the people around you, the people that work with you, for you, that is inspiring as well, to have a leader that drives that energy. So what you just said to me connects to Jack Welch, and it's a very impressive element of guiding yourself and at the same time guiding other people, energy. And it's not, as I do sometimes, talking fast and talking a lot. It is the thought process behind it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Siva. But to be honest, and there comes the modesty again, I wouldn't present myself as such. I think others, colleagues, persons around me, my family members, my friends should label that and should describe that. But thank you for the nice comments.
Well, let's go on to lesson number 8.
Yeah.
Try to enjoy. And I almost want to say that almost makes me sad, because of course you want to enjoy. But what are your thoughts about enjoyment and try to enjoy when perhaps things are a little bit more difficult?
Yeah, well, again, there are sometimes exciting moments in everybody's life, whether you have to hold a speech, whether you meet with high-level people, whether you travel and are in a new environment. But sometimes we are too busy to realize that what we are doing can actually be very nice as well. The other day, I had a lecture at the International Student House in Washington, D.C. here, and I have my brother and his wife and his daughters and his son over. And his son asked, he's 20, aren't you nervous? Because there was a whole group of people waiting for you, and the way they announced you, and there was pictures being taken. And I said, no, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the discussion. I enjoyed the questions. I enjoyed the fact that so many students took the opportunity to come over and to listen. So again, I think you should not spoil nice moments by being nervous or being uncertain or feeling uncomfortable. I try to enjoy everything that I do. And of course, you know, it doesn't always work that way. You can have very difficult people to work with, or you can have an event where you sit next to a person who is terrible and where it's difficult to engage with. But still, the overall point of view for me and my starting point is, whatever you do, enjoy it. And even, you know, I run sometimes. I try to run 3-4 times a week. Especially in the morning, if you've had a long day and a late night, you still go up and you feel a bit tired in the morning when you get up. But once you start running, you start enjoying it. So it's maybe not something that you look forward at the moment when you start running. But then I say to myself, hey, listen, I'm running now, so I might as well enjoy it. So I think the core is, whatever you do, there are positive things in it. It's, again, an experience, and we'll discuss that later. And enjoy that. That's I think important. So don't let it be spoiled by others or by your own feelings, because you are in control of your own feelings, in my view. And I know that people sometimes say, yeah, that's easier said than done. I realize that, but you are in control about your own feelings, nobody else. So if you are nervous, it's up to you to change your nervousness and put that in a more positive energy, in a more positive attitude. You can do that. So do it.
In some cases, people talk about a brain muscle. We all have brain muscles, right? You can prepare yourself for a difficult situation. And like you said, if you have to lift yourself up, many times people have that ability themselves. It's not based on other people or situations, but they have to, in that sense, get over it and bring themselves, you know, take away some of the mental barriers. And yes, you want to feel good. I think it's helpful. It's not always the solution, because when people deal with very tough situations, it's not to say, oh, don't worry about it, everything will be fine. No, they're dealing with that heavy pain that they are dealing with, mentally or physically. But the goal is to get yourself moving forward and obviously enjoy it.
Yeah, I agree, Sieb. And if I may add just one more thing, and you'll appreciate it as a Dutchman. I mean, there are certain things that you can control, like your own position, and there are things like you cannot control. And let me give you the example. You cannot control if you are on a sailboat that all of a sudden a wind starts blowing, a very strong wind. But what you can control is trying to change your course and trying to adapt your sail and make sure that you are in a different position and more favorable to the wind. So the strength of the wind, you cannot control, but you can try to control your boat and try to find a different course.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Lesson number 9, save your unique experiences. And I'm real curious about your thoughts about that. Unique experiences.
Yeah, unique experiences, I think, as it says, are unique and you have to savor them. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be grand experiences. So, okay, maybe you have the ambition one day to climb the Mount Everest, or even bigger, a unique experience would be to have a space flight or go to the moon. Those experiences are important. And a balloon flight, for instance, which I did once in my life, was unique. I don't think I will do it again, but I've had that experience and it was unique. So you should savor them. But unique experience for me are also about the daily things in life, the small things in life which happen at the hours that you tend to forget on a Saturday afternoon when you think nothing is happening, while you're reading a book or having your cup of tea, enjoying the sunshine, having a conversation with somebody. These are all small things. Even, you know, walking my dog and being together out in the woods here at Rock Creek Park is for me a unique experience. And the thing is, the importance is to recognize them and, again, also to enjoy them.
That's a very important point. And as you say, it doesn't have to be unique by a trip to the moon or something like that. But indeed, you go for a walk and you experience that situation. And I think many people in our audience can relate to that. You bring yourself to a level of satisfaction. And that is, of course, pretty ideal and sometimes a moment to relax and get your mind organized and you're ready to deal with whatever your work or life has to bring you.
Absolutely. And it's also, you know, if, for instance, if you have a young family, unique experiences can also be with, like we do often in the Netherlands, that going with your young children to a sports match on Saturday morning, because they that's common in the Netherlands, that children go at an early age to their soccer club or their hockey club on their bike. And if you go there with your child, biking together, going to the sports field and seeing him or her play is a unique experience as well. And it, you know, there's a risk that it becomes routine and that you're tired after a working week and that you say, oh, Saturday morning, we have to get up at 7 because he or she has to play at 8 o'clock. No, I mean, try to get the best out of it again. It's a unique experience. And before you know, they go on their own bike and they say, I don't need you anymore, Dad. You go ahead. I go with my friends to my soccer club.
Isn't it interesting in life, I think, for many people that when we are children and kids and maybe teenagers, we are typically very self-centered. And as we evolve in life and have experiences, and especially when you have children yourself, grandchildren, they become so precious, so unique that they influence you and you put sort of that circle of life in perspective and say, wow, I want to help. I want to make sure they're fine, that they are taken care of in whatever way that means.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I fully agree with you, Sieb. It comes back to a few earlier lessons that we discussed, the importance of the family and the circle of the family. But it also comes back, for instance, to learning, that you can continue to learn. I give you one small example, a very personal example, but I was raised in a place called Uithoorn, and I always stayed in the elderly house where my father died in 86 and also my mother died in 2018. They bought the house when they were just married. My brothers were raised there. So it was a house which was very personal and very close to my heart. And then when my mother died and we had taken out all of her stuff, We had found a new buyer for the house. I closed the door for the last time behind me, and I was a bit sad. You know, this is the end actually of a period of history, and also end more or less of a phase in your life. And then my daughter said, well, Dad, I understand that you're sad, but I hope that the new people who are going to live in the house will have the same good memories as you have. And actually, I thought, this is a lot of wisdom.
Yeah.
And she's right.
Yeah.
You know, she's right in that. If people can have the same experience as I have, that's great. That's actually what it's all about. So again, you can learn even at an elderly age, and you can also learn from your children. That's what I want to say.
Yeah, very powerful. And I hear from our conversation, your lessons are truly connected.
Yeah.
The nine lessons
absolutely.
So far. So
yeah.
We're getting ready for lesson number 10. Know yourself. And boy, does that fit with what you are sharing with us.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Know yourself means that you have to know who you are. And again, that's probably not easy at an early age. You have to be in situations, you have to meet with people, and then you should look in the mirror quite often and say, this is me. Not only your positive things, but also your negative aspects. So you should know yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you should also be aware of the fact that not every situation is suitable for instance, for your leadership or for your way of working. But it starts with knowing who you are and act according to it, and also know your limitations. So, and I think people tend to overestimate themselves, and maybe men even more than women. And I'm generalized, I realize that, but in general, men tend to overestimate themselves and do not know themselves very well. Women in general try to, some mostly are too modest and try to put themselves a bit too far away. But it all starts with knowing yourself, realizing who you are, and facing your shortcomings as well.
It helps perhaps for people to have a mentor, to have an individual
yes.
that looks out for them, but also someone who can be direct in saying, hey, this is wrong what you're doing. You need to change this, right?
Because yeah.
that's important as well.
Absolutely.
Have you had the fortune of having a mentor in your life, in your career?
Well, I think I have a circle of friends and family, and I hope also colleagues that do not feel shy to come to me and correct me, or also, you know, compliment me if things go well. So I think that it's important, not so much one figure. I have one good friend with whom I discuss, he's in the Netherlands, whom I discuss every now and then things. But in general, I think it is important to create that environment that people feel free to approach you with whatever they would like to say. So a mentor, I've had a mentor during my student time. There are in my career colleague diplomats, you know, who I see as an example, or who I get along with, or who are very different, but where I can learn from. And then probably, you know, I think maybe the best mentor is my wife, who keeps me straight and who says, okay, I don't think you're the ambassador and you can do this. You just have to help washing the dishes and walk the dog for the last round.
Keep your feet on the ground.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. Well, that covers 10 lessons, but I like to sneak in another question, if you don't mind. Are there any lessons in your life, in your career, that perhaps you have unlearned?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. What we earlier discussed about authority, I think as a youngster, I was impressed by leaders, by sportsmen, by politicians, by, you know, I looked up to them, maybe in a way that I find it not easy to approach them, let alone to, you know, to say something to them. But you realize that they are normal people as well. And I once had the opportunity to meet a famous Dutch soccer player, Marco van Basten.
Yeah, well known.
He's a fantastic player. And I thought, yeah, you know, he's being approached by many people. And, you know, he probably doesn't like it if I speak to him. And he's fair. But, you know, I just passed by and I said, hi, Marco, thank you for playing for Ajax. I think you did a great job. And he said, well, thank you very much. Are you going often? And, you know, and what game do you like? So he actually reacted, something that I had not expected. because I looked up to authority. So I would say a lesson that one should unlearn is not to be afraid to step out or to speak to somebody, even if you think that he or she doesn't like it. If you feel like doing it, you should do it.
Wow, that's a hole in one. I like it. That really makes sense to me, and I believe to our global audience. And I want to thank you for being part of our program and for sharing your wisdom with our global audience. In closing, I want to make a few remarks. You have been listening to the international podcast, 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn, sponsored by PDF, the Professional Development Forum. PDF provides webinars, social media discussions, podcasts, and parties. And best of all, it's all for free. For more information, please visit professionaldevelopmentforum.org. Our guest today is André Haspels, Ambassador of the Kingdom of the Netherlands to the United States of America, sharing his 10 lessons that took him 50 years to learn. And to our audience, don't forget to leave us a review or a comment. You can also email us at podcast@10lessonslearned.com. That is podcast@10lessonslearned.com. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And remember, this is a podcast that makes the world wiser and wiser, podcast by podcast, lesson by lesson. Thank you, and stay safe.